Christian Williams, welcome to KABU.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Christian's a local boy, makes good. He went to Reed College. That was his local affiliation. He became a writer. He was active in college and continued in lots of ways in Portland. He became a drawbridge operator, which gives him a great deal of time for writing. His major book, at least the big seller, is Our Enemies in Blue. He's on the editorial board of the journal Anarchist Studies. He's also active in Local 88 of AFSCME as a steward of the union and active in their politics. His most recent work is Wither Anarchism, an examination of the anarchist movement today and what it really needs in the United States. It's distributed by AK Press, and it's our subject today, what is to be done by anarchists. His assessment, for me at least, has a great deal of relevance for any democratic socialist. So, Christian, in Wither Anarchism, you contend for a critical reevaluation and reformation of anarchism. You call it a deconstruction and renewal. Part of the renewal is going back to its roots. During the essay, you point out that we need living models of political activism that inform our theoretical and idea coherence, how we cohere our ideas around our practice, and bringing the ideals of anarchism to life. So first, Christian, why a revaluation, and what might be the affirmative ideals?
Let me start by saying a little bit about how I understand anarchism. I think it comes down to this principle of autonomy, which is that decisions should be made by the people most affected by them. Taken as an organizing principle of society, what that would mean is that workplaces would be controlled by the people who work in them. Schools would be controlled by the people who teach and learn there. Communities would be controlled by the people who live in them. And that suggests a very egalitarian, democratic model of how society could operate, as opposed to a hierarchical, authoritarian model where the people who own things control things, where rather than being participants in deciding what our communities look like, how our workplaces operate, all that sort of thing, we basically just show up and do what we're told. And as a historical idea, there are any number of notions or movements or moments in history that anticipated anarchism, but it really developed as a theory in the 19th century and became a political movement at the very end of the 19th century and into the 20th century. In the United States at the time, it was a movement largely of working class immigrants. Now, if we fast forward for a century and look at the movement now, it's mostly a movement of disaffected young people from the deteriorating middle class. And there's kind of a mystery as to how it went from the one kind of composition to the other. Part of what I try to do in the pamphlet is look at how the movement changed over the course of the 20th century. And for that, I rely very heavily on two recent studies, one by Andy Cornell called Unruly Equality and the other by Spencer Sunshine, his stubbornly unpublished dissertation. The argument that, borrowing from them, that I make is that though there's an organizational continuity between the early 20th century immigrant syndicalists and the 21st century anarchist scene, there's an ideological gap where at some point mid-century, anarchism became divorced from working class life and increasingly preoccupied with cultural manifestations, cultural both in the artistic sense of like music, theater, art, that sort of thing, but also in the anthropological sense of the way people directly organize their lives. And the kind of reevaluation that I'm calling for is trying to move anarchism past a point where it is simply a subcultural phenomena that tends to appeal to people at a particular moment in their lives, usually their young adulthood, but has largely given up on the conception that it can be a social force organizing millions of people to radically change society. I think we need to get back to that radical vision, even if there's no real return to the theories of the 19th century.
But that radical vision, the one big union, the sense of workers should be running the society rather than the bosses, you're not calling for a return to the early anarchism or even to the Wobblies as not just the centerpiece but carrier of all anarchist positions. you do see, and in the book you're very clear, that modern environmentalism, the peace movement, the feminist movement, the anti-racist movement, all of those, in fact, have to be part of it and can have these same democratic goals, but we can't confine it to the workplace, and the community has to be much larger than the community of the massive manual worker workshops of all of the industrializing countries where it made sense to center your struggle on those workers and their struggles. It seems to me the struggle is now really diversified enormously. Everybody, though, is also now part of it. We have very little peasantry left, for example. Is that a right reading of what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm certainly not nostalgically looking back to a period where the only question was the question of labor. You're exactly right that the increasing attention given to questions of race and gender and environmentalism, they need to be central to any project that is even on the left, and especially any anarchism worthy of the name. There's no return to classical anarchism or anarcho-syndicalism or anything of that sort. But I think that there was an ambition to anarchism in the earlier period, not just finding the right way for individual people to live and not just creating these sorts of cozy communities where we will treat each other well and feel safe, but of genuinely changing the entire society. And the rhetoric of that has survived, but the idea of it has largely been lost. And so that earlier, more ambitious spirit of anarchism is something that I would want to see brought forward into the 21st century. But the theories themselves, society is a lot different now than it was in 1905, and capitalism has changed, the state has changed, the movements opposing capitalism and the state have changed and also need to change in relation to how those systems of power have changed. And I think there is a much more general awareness of the issues of gender equality, the issues of racial equality, the concern for the environment, that sort of thing, which absolutely we've benefited from having added those to our politics.
This is KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon. Bill Resnick for the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm talking to Christian Williams, who is a
Troublemaker,
a drawbridge operator. Christian is well known here as a writer, as well known as a political writer can be on the left now. His big national book is Our Enemies in Blue. It's about the police. In his last chapter, he talks about how we have to change all manner of policing towards making public safety a democratic, community-run organization, which has happened in some societies, as he points out in that last chapter. He also wrote the book Wither Anarchism. Christian, we talked about the history of anarchism. I remember reading the book Women and Socialism, the manual of the Social Democratic Party of Germany through its great era of growth. It's radically democratic. It called for democratic communities, democratic child rearing. It was a bestseller in the Social Democratic libraries and went through 109 editions in Germany. But it was very radical, and it expressed a huge workers' movement in Germany that was interested not just in the workplace but in the society. Christian, let's get to the final issue that I was hoping to talk about, theory and practice. It's one thing to set down and outline the way you can combine those two souls of anarchism and that it has to be done. It's another to develop them, and they have to be developed in practice. And what we mean by it, you are very modest. You're not trying to develop a finished theory of anarchism and to do a blueprint of all of the kinds of institutional forms that you need. On the other hand, we do need institutional forms. We need models for doing it. No model is going to be we just emulate it woodenly. Oh, yes, that's how we do it. How do you see these models developing, people getting active? You have to be active in something. You can't be active in theory.
One of the weaknesses that I try pointing to in my pamphlet is that anarchism has largely ceased to function as any sort of coherent body of thought or single theory or even an argument, and instead has become this collection of axioms largely borrowed from other political traditions that are arbitrarily grouped together under an anarchist flag. And I think that's a real problem, partly because it limits our ability to make any sort of arguments for the things that we want. And it also makes it practically impossible to have any sort of principled disagreement about which positions are the correct ones. I mean, if it all just comes down to axioms that we accept on faith, then some people have the faith and some people don't. When people disagree, the only recourse really is to some sort of schism or just exclusion or throw them out. So I'm afraid that the theory side of the theory and practice dyad is not as strong as you may wish that it was. In terms of the practice side, I think over the last half century, anarchists have become increasingly preoccupied with practice, but at a very, very small scale, as though the point of a political movement was to have meetings that are well run and really militant demonstrations and treat each other well in our interpersonal interactions. And all of that's important, but that can hardly be the total program, or else you're stuck with a situation where it's all means and no ends. And to some degree, I think that's a failing. The results from an overdeveloped moral commitment to the means and the ends fitting together, and the result of that in the long term has been that the means have completely eclipsed any ends that may have once been there. In terms of what projects I see as developing along anarchist lines, I think anywhere where people are resisting the powers that impose on them, that there's going to be a trace of that sort of anarchist spirit. And whether that can be developed, whether that can be systematized, whether that impulse that leads people to assert their own dignity and resist authority can be elaborated into a theory, whether that can be developed into a sort of coherent political program, that I think is exactly the challenge ahead of us.
Let me make a challenge to you in that vein. There are movements, for example, in the nurses' unions and the nurses in general, as well as in public school unionism, moving away from business unionism and moving towards social unionism. And for both nurses and teachers, they're bargaining for contracts not so much on wages and salaries, which are too low in many states, but in many states they're pretty decent, and they have to come up a lot. But that isn't the question that they're bargaining about. They're bargaining about the way these institutions are run, the top-down manner, the way authority treats them and isolates teachers and nurses into very narrow categories. And they're reaching out to the public saying, we want to build the schools our students deserve, and we want to build the health. The nurses are basically, that's not their slogan, but it's the same. We want to build a healthcare system that really provides healthcare and universal healthcare. They're, of course, in favor of single payer, the big nurses union, the National Nurses Union. It seems to me that there are impulses there, and they don't deny the need for some forms of lots of expertise and authority in the schools. There needs to be management. We're not just sort of one big group sitting down every morning for 4 hours arguing about what people are going to do or contending for different models. It's far more complicated, and they recognize that. But managers have to be evaluated by the employees and not by whoever, some boss on top that's appointed by capitalist elites of one kind or another. Those kinds of movements within established, and there are movements of that type almost everywhere, and even in social life, in sexuality, in child-rearing in particular, Dr. Spock is now a conservative in comparison to where the main body of child-rearing aspiration is. He's been outdone by people who are far more interested in child development and in interesting ways. It seems to me society is really alive with an effort at democratic principles and a struggle for people to live more democratically. It's slightly different than in the social classes how it happens, but it's happening in all of the classes, actually. How does the anarchist movement deal with these questions of social life and democracy in life and democracy in these big institutions that are not going to disappear?
I'll take the example that you started with of the crisis in the labor movement. There is a lot that is in transition in the labor movement as a whole right now. There really is a crisis where the longstanding business union model is becoming less and less tenable, even on its own terms. That presents a set of opportunities. And probably the most exciting thing I've seen happen in terms of the labor movement in the last couple of years is the series of teacher strikes that occurred in very conservative places, often places where the teachers were not on the whole unionized. It happened to some degree independently of the official teachers unions, in some places where it was just strictly illegal for them to strike, and they did it anyway. And they won gains not just in West Virginia, they won pay raises not just for the teachers but for all public employees.
That was really terrific, yeah.
So there's the collapse of – the slow collapse of the existing model opens up some possibilities for new militancy. It opens up kind of possibilities you were talking about of taking a much broader look at the role of the labor movement in society besides just wage and hour kind of questions. I think it also gives us an opportunity to sort of reinvent the institutions of the labor movement, move them in a less bureaucratic, more democratic direction, where maybe the model of labor action depends less on lawyers and the National Labor Relations Board and more on workers doing things directly themselves. I think as the labor movement makes that transition, the ideas of anarchism could do a lot to inform what comes next for the labor movement. And the history of anarchism suggests that those ideas can and should be important to that transition. I think the question is whether the anarchism that we have is up to the task of actually engaging in that kind of political renewal. In a way, it's like the anarchism that we have has bottomed out and the labor movement that we have has bottomed out. But perhaps if we put these things together, we can come up with two new things.
You know, that was a really great way to end and to move towards talking about this a lot more, because these democratic impulses, it was anarchism that still stands for their old slogan, the boss's brains are under the workers' hats, that human beings have enormous capacity, much of it stifled in our current society, but still sort of trying to express itself. That's going to continue. And anarchism really was a force in trying to maintain those ideals, even if a lot of it was just in literature and history. But the history of the workers' movement is so interesting. Anarchism was important in it, even if it was stifled in mid-century and before and after. So, Christian, I wish you well in your work, and thanks a lot for talking to us today.
Oh, it's always a pleasure.
Yeah, this one's for the workers who talk.